Hello and welcome to Punani Productions podcast. This is your host, Queen Layla. Welcome to the oral portal for sexual freedom, your place to find solace. Now, before we begin, remember to put a wei xiao on your face. Wei means slight, xiao means to smile. So all you have to do is turn the corners of your mouth upwards and put a slight smile on your face. So throughout the day, whenever you need to pick me up, remember, you can always put a wei xiao on your face. Today, we have a very special episode. I have my lovely new friend, Miss Kim Rubb from the UK here with me. Welcome, Miss Kim.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We'd love for you to share your personal empowerment story. What do you want to tell our listeners today?
Well, I think the question that you posed me was, how did I find my female empowerment, my female energy? And it was something that's happened over the last 32 years. I've been on the London, UK fetish scene for that long. And when I first discovered the scene, I knew nothing about it. There was no internet in those days, so you just didn't know about these things. So it was really just a voyage of discovery on the ground, hit the ground running sort of thing. You know, I didn't discover it in a book or find it on the internet or hear about it from a friend. I kind of ended up at a fetish club and immersed myself into the scene by becoming a regular clubber, really, a fetish clubber. So it was just something that's happened over time. And I certainly didn't fully embrace it straight away, because it was like, what the hell is this? Where am I? What am I doing? Because I come from a time of no internet, no way of finding out things. And I wasn't about to throw myself in headlong. I like to find things out and watch and look and learn. I'm not one for just diving in. So I'm more calculated than that.
Wow, that's lovely. So tell me about your your first sexual or BDSM encounter, something that you were shocked to see or maybe you were interested in. I'm curious to know how it all started. You said you just randomly went to a fetish party. Could you explain a little more about that?
Yes, well, you have to understand the time. It was 32 years ago and there was no internet. It wasn't out in the open. You know, Beyonce wasn't wearing a latex dress. You know, Rihanna wasn't talking about a bit of slip and tackle, slap and tickle. it just wasn't out 32 years ago. So everything was shocking. Everything was like, oh my God. There wasn't anything that I thought, oh, I've seen this before. I've seen it in a YouTube video. I've seen there just wasn't anything like that. We didn't even have mobile phones back then, let alone the internet. So you just kind of, you know, every time you went to a fetish club, it was like, oh my God, there's another thing I've never seen before. And I do still see things now that I think, well, that's a first. I haven't seen that before. It's always good to have a first, isn't it? So everything's kind of, there was nothing that stood out like this was like, oh my God. Because it was all, oh my God. All of it. Every single time I went out, it was like, oh my God, look at this, look at that. I mean, you have to remember the time. It's the time of the dinosaurs.
Well, now you are a very successful dom online. How did you go about making that transition from no internet to phone to now being all over the place?
Well, prior to becoming a dom, I was a fetish club promoter, and I was 6 years on the scene before I started my own event. And I was pretty much girl about town, so I would run about collecting names, addresses, and telephone numbers. Yes, people used to give them your home address back in the day. It didn't seem like such a weird thing to do. And there was no internet, there was no emails. So, you know, you got people's telephone numbers. So when I decided to start my own fetish club, I had a little black book full of names and addresses and phone numbers. So, you know, you just got on the phone or you called one key person, and then that person would call everybody, and the bush telegraph went out, and then you got your following. But it was very much at the beginning. You printed up a hard copy flyer on a piece of card, and you put it in an envelope, you put a stamp on it, and you sent it to their home address. That's how you did it. And of course, over the years, as the internet and computers came on board, the transition went from posting flyers to people's homes about your event to transitioning into emails, and you stop sending hard copy flyers to people's homes and you sent digital flyers to people's inboxes. So that's how the transition came. But that took, you know, 20 Club Rub was 20 years old when I stopped it, and I did a fetish club before that called the Rubber Nipple Club for 2 years. So that's 22 years, every single month, 264 consecutive monthly events. So for a good half of that, it was definitely, snail mail, we call it. Yes, and bush telegraph. So that's how you got your word out. But I was a club promoter before I was a professional dominatrix, basically.
And when you just started in the scene, were there already professional dominance?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
For play?
In fact, that's how I came to find the scene, because I was in San Francisco, south of Market, Soma, watched two transvestites walk in a bar, said to my friend, let's follow them. We went into the bar, started talking to them, and one of them was called Mistress K, a transvestite dominatrix, who was quite a formidable woman. And when she was coming over to London on a trip, my friend called me, because she'd stayed friends with them because she lived there, and said, Kay wants your telephone number, can I give her it? And I went, yeah. She called me and she said, come to a little club with us. And I went, what sort of club? And she went, oh, just a little S&M club. And I thought, what the hell is that? That was 32 years ago. So, yes, there were dominatrixes back then. There have always been dominatrixes, you know, probably back to the cavemen, you know, give me that lump of meat, give me that dinosaur leg and I'll beat it with the bone to beat you with it. I would have thought it's always been around. Yeah, we're not doing anything new. We trade with what we've got, darling.
Right. Sex work is empowering. Do you find that you've become more in tune with yourself after becoming a professional dominant, or it's from being in the scene 32 years?
I don't think a tremendous amount has happened since I became a professional dominatrix. I think, you know, the biggest change for me was when I discovered a spiritual path. I'm not religious. I believe in the power of oneself and harnessing that. And I would watch Oprah Winfrey's Super Soul Sundays on the television, and then progress to Eckhart Tolle and Marianne Williamson and Tony Robbins. And once I started watching those sorts and listening to those sort of people on podcasts, etc., that's when a real shift happened for me. You know, you have to sort out who you are inside first, and then you can be the best, you know, version of yourself for others. And I think domination is a very giving, caring profession. that some alpha females would beg to differ, but I'm more of a service top. I like to do a good job. I get great job satisfaction of doing something really well for me. And if they get a good time out of it, then I've done a good job, haven't I? Which I can feel good about. But yeah, I'm more on a spiritual path, and that's opened up a world of possibilities to me.
That's wonderful. I wanted to know what, you know, you said to thy unknown self be true. I've heard you say this many times, and I know for myself, there's ups and downs of life, you know, there's learning curves and challenges. And what is one story that you can share that really affected you personally? Like, how did you know your personal preference, like a like or dislike? Like, usually something bad happens for us to be able to see what we need in ourselves. Does that make sense?
But not always. You can learn by looking at other people. You don't necessarily have to go through lots of trials and tribulations to find out what's right and wrong. You know, I've learned by looking at other people. I think I said this earlier on, that, you know, I observe, I look, I decide before I'm going to do something. You don't always have to jump in head first and get it wrong to know that you don't like it. I'm evolved enough to know that there's certain things that I'm never going to like. I'm not a big fan of anal play. And, you know, it's as simple as I don't like the smell of shit. You know, there's not a lot of ways around it. I mean, you know, there are rubber anal sheath pants, which is a very good way around it, and I've discovered those, and they are a very good way of keeping all the smell inside a pair of rubber pants. So I do use those quite often, but you know, I'm a big kind of oratory kind of smell kind, is it oratory? Smell kind of person.
Olfactory, so yes.
Olfactory, that's it. So I'm, I like smells, but I also dislike really horrible smells. So, you know.
Very sensitive.
Do I need to go down the route of doing lots and lots and lots of anal play to go, oh God, I hate this. I'm much rather kind of just work out how I sort out the smell problem.
I think we're very the same, have a very strong sense of smell. So
I have an extreme sense of smell. I can smell things that nobody else can smell. I go, can you smell that? No. I think, how can you not smell that? Yeah.
Good to know you have very good senses. All four senses are working well.
Yeah, and I have common sense as well. That's not so common.
Well, I don't know if you've heard, you know, recently in the scene, like where in my sex education class, we talk about don't yuck my yum. Have you, you know, heard this term before?
No,
it's usually
never.
Used. So maybe your like is not somebody else's like.
Absolutely.
So don't yuck my yum. Have you ever experienced where any situation where you were? What's the way that I want to put this? That thought.
Somebody has put you off something?
Right. Or has somebody done anything like that to make you feel uncomfortable? And how did you stand up for yourself?
No, not really. I don't think anybody's ever done that. I don't remember any occasions, but I'm very mindful of things like that when I'm teaching in my mistress workshop. You know, one of the things I say right at the beginning is, you know, a mistress isn't one size fits all, that we all have to do everything to be a mistress. A mistress can just specialize in one area, just do one type of play. And you don't have to like everything. You don't have to yuck somebody else's yum, if that's the right terminology. You know, we're all so different, and I think that's something that women have to learn straight at the beginning. We're all different. That's fine. We can all be different. In fact, great that we are different. God forbid we'd all be the same. You know, we need to find our own special something, unique selling point. I had a mistress friend who was talking to me about, she'd been on Twitter and she had been talking about menstrual blood. And she's saying, I'm getting a lot of flack about it. I'm getting a lot of people saying, you know, horrible things about it. And I went, oh, ignore them. I said, it's unique. It's unique about you. And God forbid that we should have yet another mistress that doesn't have anything unique about her. And I said, you should revel in your uniqueness, because in all these years that I've been on the scene, I've never heard anybody talking about menstrual blood to play with it. And that is unique. And you should be applauded for that.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I think so. And you could yuck that, couldn't you?
A lot of people can yuck everything.
Because she yums it.
Right.
She really yums it.
Yes, there's also a new fad where people are putting period blood on their faces. Have you heard about
that? I don't know what she does with it, to be quite honest with you. I didn't go down that route, but I just thought we should all just do whatever we want to do, you know. And there's going to be somebody out there that's going to go, ooh, that's sexy. And then she's cornered the market.
Right. So like you said, it's all about what's in your heart, right? Yeah. Be unique and do what speaks
Absolutely.
To you.
Be unique.
I want to know if there were any times in your life where a client has crossed a boundary, and how did you deal with that?
Crossed a boundary. I'm quite silent but deadly. Nobody really disrespects me or tries it on. I have a look that I give them and usually quietens them down. But nobody's turned up at the house unannounced or stalked me, or no, I don't get anything like that. I think you need to set the tone. You need to teach people how to treat you. So I always say, I'm the headmistress. I'm in the office. I'm not in the playground with the bullies.
Excellent.
So I don't go in for lots of childish behavior or gossiping or jumping on bandwagons or being mean to people en masse. You know, I don't agree with any of that sort of behavior. I'm much more, I don't know, I'm the headmistress. I'm in the office.
That's right. Soft at heart, but strict on the outside.
Yeah, well, I don't need to get involved in loads of nonsense and rubbish and gossip and being mean. It's not my scene.
No, agreed.
And it's the same with clients, you know, they know where they stand with me, and I always get treated with the greatest respect because I respect myself first.
Yes, I recently read an NLP book, Neuro-Linguistic mm-hmm. Programming, and
Absolutely.
It said the value of our lives is based on the quality of our the quality of our lives is based on the quality of our communication. Mm-hmm. And the way we talk to ourselves is the way other people treat us.
Absolutely. Yes. To thine own self be true. You have to work on yourself first. And then when you're happy with yourself and the way you conduct yourself, listen, I'm my own biggest taskmaster. Nobody has to hold me up and say, you should do better, because I'm there first, making sure that I do better and that I do set a good example and a standard, et cetera, et cetera.
And do you, I would like to know about your, you know, daily habits. Is this, I think that's something to do with, you know, routine and spirituality and taking care of yourself. Self-care before, you know, love yourself before loving others is what my dad always taught me. Seems like you agree with that. You want to share a little bit?
Totally agree with that. Yes, I go for prior to what's just been happening in the world, I used to go swimming every morning. So that stopped. and I decided to go for a walk. So I walked to the Thames and I take a photograph of the Tower Bridge every morning, and it's my joy. I love it. And of course, it's not the same picture. I try and get a different angle, different lighting, the sun, dull days, raining, etc. But I also, social media is something that I religiously do every day. You know, we are our habits, and if they're good habits, they set us up for the day. So I'm all for some good positive habits and exercise and eating well and positivity. I love photography. I have 4 Instagram profiles and they're all very, very different, and I post different sorts of content. And I'm having some funny because I don't really go onto Instagram and look at what anybody else is doing. It's like my diary. It's like my pictorial diary every day, and I love it. I don't really care what anybody else is
doing. That's all that matters, is if you're happy doing that. So do you actually do that yourself? I saw you do have a web slave.
No, I don't have a web slave as in does any of my social media. Nobody does my social media except me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I have somebody who will, if I go, I need a new page on my misskimrub.com website, a new page for photographs, then he'll put the new page on and then I'll upload the photographs onto it. But I do all my tweets.
Wow.
All my Instagram, all my FetLife, all my Pinterest. What have I missed out?
It's all you.
It's all about me and it's all done by me.
Wow, kudos to you. We have a lot to learn.
Well, I do teach a social media marketing workshop. So if anybody wants to get to 150K social media, like my numbers are at, then I can teach you how I do it. But it's hard work and dedication. You don't get anything in this world by sitting on your ass and doing nothing, do you?
That's right. That's right. Money doesn't grow on trees, is some saying that
yes,
I've been used to hearing. But I think work is, if you have passion for something, you tend to give it more of your heart. So to find something that you really care about is really important to your own self-happiness.
Yes.
And may I ask what you did before you were in the scene, or that is private? Before you became a professional dominatrix, like through all those years you were still playing, but you know, never even thought about it. You do teach the classes.
So do you mean pre 32 years ago or right up to becoming a pro dom?
I think right up to becoming pro dom. You know, okay, how did
So I was a fetish club promoter for 22 years.
Right, right.
And then as soon as I closed Club Rob down after 20 years, I decided to become a pro dom. So I've only been a pro dom 3 years. But of course, I've been teaching my mistress workshop for 8 years. So it's not like I've just started. I started 32 years ago learning about BDSM. So yes, it's been a
never-ending journey, right?
It's never going to end, is it? Because it's such a fantastic subject that you're never going to stop learning. Yeah, it's great. But prior to the fetish scene, I was a public relations officer. So I worked in PR.
Ah, so that's all your expertise roaming around in your club promoting. And was that
like a different expertise role? Now. It is different expertise now, it's that mindset, isn't it? It's that kind of promotional mindset, which I've got. Yeah. Sorry, what was that question?
Oh, I was just going to say, what did you end up doing, like the club promotion full time? That's how you were making your money, or you had other things as well?
For 22 years, I was a full time fetish club promoter.
Oh, wow. So
yes.
Too bad the nipple, what was it? You had rubber nipple.
Very first club I ran was the rubber nipple. That was for 2 years. And then straight after that, I ran club rub for 20 years. I still run a fetish club. I run a rubber only club twice a year called Rubber Cult, and it's a rubber only fetish club. So it is the real deal, the real fetish club, because you have to be in fetish gear to get in. In fact, you can't get in unless you're wearing rubber.
That's amazing. So for all the latex hood lovers, can find Miss Kim in the UK.
Well, latex clothing lovers, you know, you couldn't just come in a hood.
But you have to have some latex on, otherwise you're out.
No, you have to have full latex on.
Yeah, I find it's too hot for my butt.
Well, it's hot when it's hot and it's cold when it's cold.
Feels so good.
But yeah, it's hot in the summer. Yeah.
You have the Queen Bee Society in the UK, and you've just allowed me to start the New York chapter. I'm so excited. Why don't you tell our guests a little bit more about what it's all about?
Great. Well, it's something that I decided to do for all of the UK DOMs, because in the UK, we don't have establishments where they all work together. And that constitutes a brothel, a disorderly house, and that's not allowed in the UK. So girls work in isolation. So unless they go to a fetish club occasionally, none of them get to know each other. Okay, you can chat to somebody on Twitter or FetLife, but mainly, you know, you make real bonds with people when you actually get together with them. So I decided to invite everybody to a drinks event. So it's not a pay event. It's just I find a bar and I invite everybody and we all meet up with each other. And I've done about 8 of them now over the last 3 years. And it's just a great opportunity for girls to get together. And I just love the idea that somebody else wants to do it in another country, in another city. And the fact that it's going to be in New York is like, that's amazing. So I'm going to come next May. So you've got to have one next May.
Definitely. You will be the honored special guest, the original Queen Bee.
But I love the idea of sisterhood, you know, sisterhood of the dominatrix. And I think that we should all get together and celebrate our powerful uniqueness.
I love it. I'm so excited to start the New York chapter, and I want everybody to be on the lookout for the news. So thank you. Would you like to share one word or mantra for our listeners?
Gosh.
How can we take them into sexual freedom? What message would you like to leave?
I think don't rush into things. Do things in your own good time. Research and plan and find out about things. Work hard. I don't know. I wanted to say something a bit more profound than that, but yeah. It doesn't come easy. You have to work hard at these things.
Yeah, you have to work hard at yourself. And work hard in your life, right? Like,
yeah,
I agree. But yes, to thine own self be true is your base
motto.
Message. Yeah,
it is. That's my motto. Yes, you have to think of yourself first and work on yourself first. Then everybody else gets a good version of you.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing, Miss Kim. I'm so happy to have had you here today. And
That's okay.
We will see you again.
I hope so. Bye-bye.